Welcome to the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast, where we go inside what makes a coach a coach. The Guardians of the Game podcast is a production of the National Association of Basketball Coaches and Learfield IMG College, brought to you by Wilson Sporting Goods. And now, here's your host, Dave Odom.
Welcome back to the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast. We are fortunate to have one of the very best coaches in the Big Ten, and certainly one of the best coaches in America, Wisconsin Badgers' own Greg Gard. Greg, thank you for taking some time out of your busy schedule and talking to us and all of the young listeners, particularly that like to hear our podcast weekly. You're in one of the really more revered programs in the country, one that has been very, very successful at every level, and we want to hear all about that too. But right now, I'd like to start at the beginning. Let's talk about you being born on December the 3rd, 1970, and you're 49 years old now, and you were born in a small little town, Cobb, Wisconsin. And it's a small town. I had to look it up on the map. I didn't even know where it was. Your parents were hog farmers. They lived on livestock. And I think from what I'd heard, the farm kind of turned into a soybean and corn farm later on. Tell us a little bit about your early life growing up on that farm in Wisconsin.
Well, thanks for having me on, Dave. Yeah, you're right. I mean, you're not the first one that couldn't find Cobb on the map. I'll tell you that. I've asked even people here in Wisconsin. They're not quite sure. But, yeah, it's a small town, about over 400 in terms of population now. It wasn't that big when I was there. So it's grown a little bit. But my grandparents, on my dad's side, owned a farm about a mile north of Cobb. So my dad kind of helped my grandfather at that time. He was in retirement. And my dad had a job as a credit manager, credit loan officer. And my mom worked as a secretary at our local high school. So I got exposed to a lot early. And I think the biggest thing that jumped out about life on the farm or farm work was it taught me really fast the importance of a work ethic, accountability, teamwork, and obviously working with my dad and grandfather, and also have two younger brothers. It taught me really quickly how important that was, and also that if you didn't get the job done right, you had to do it over. And that really laid the groundwork in terms of who I am as a person, and I think helped, regardless of what profession I was going to choose down the road. It instilled really good work habits. It instilled a discipline and an understanding of you know, just continuing to find a way. And very fortunate to have that background, because I know there's no doubt it's helped me in terms of just persevering through maybe some harder times, whether it be coaching or any personal things that have come up. So Cobb is a really neat little town. You know everybody. You know, it's one of those towns that you rarely lock your door, and everybody follows a local high school team. And I was fortunate enough to play on a state tournament team in 1989, and obviously everybody in that whole school district ended up here in Madison for the state tournament. So looking back, it was a great beginning in terms of preparing me for where I am at right now.
Listen, you took a step towards an area that I wanted you to expand a little bit on. You talked about growing up on a farm, and you know, the having to wake up in the morning and kind of answer the bell, and whatever the farm chores were, you had to make sure you did that, because you know your family was counting on you, and livestock needed to be handled, and all of that. How does that relate to today when you wake up in the middle of a Big Ten season, or even in July sometime, where you're not faced with a game, but you're faced with building a team and the problems that need to be handled at all times of the year? How does that translate?
Well, I think the one thing, Dave, is that there's no days off. And you can't, when you're managing a farm, and are responsible for livestock, they have to be taken care of every day. I mean, it's the livelihood that your family is dependent upon. So like I said, I learned really early the importance of that and how important doing, you had to do your job. You're counted on to do your job. And I know there were several times, maybe the job I was assigned, I didn't do up to my dad's standards. And he said, go back and do it again. So you learned that you weren't getting your way out of anything. And you had learned that you had to persevere and find a way to get it done the right way. And, you know, if you get it done the right way, then it meant you had more time to do other fun, more fun things. So I think that really stood out in terms of it was hard work. It was maybe something you didn't enjoy doing per se, but it was important to the betterment of the whole group. And that being obviously the success of the farm and the livelihood of our family. We depended on that. We needed that in terms of, you know, financial income. And like I said, you took that responsibility very seriously because you understood how important it was to your grandparents and also your own parents.
All right, let's talk about your high school career a little bit. You went to high school right there in Cobb, and I know you played basketball. You said you'd gone to the state tournament 2 or 3 years there, and I guess you were also a baseball player there. I don't know about football or anything like that. Did you play all three sports? Too. Everybody just kind of pitched in according to the season.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's I look back at those experiences too. And I know in today's world, we find very few three sport athletes. You know, there's so much specialization going on. But I was fortunate that, I played football, basketball, and baseball all 4 years, played on really good teams. And it also taught me, from a standpoint specifically in basketball, you know, I was the ninth man in an 8-man rotation, Dave. So I didn't see a whole lot of time. But I think it's also looking back helped prepare me for how do you handle and manage a team, knowing that roles and responsibilities maybe are a little bit different, but everybody's important. Because I was one of those guys sitting at the outside a little bit looking in terms of getting major minutes. So it helped me, I think, evaluate and becoming a better evaluator and study the game more because I spent more time on the bench, but also how to manage and the importance of everybody on that team. Because I was in their shoes. It's easy sometimes to be a part of a team when you're the star, but it's a little more difficult when you're not getting all the attention or maybe the playing time that you would like. So being able to balance that and talk people through that is important. And like I said, I lived it, so I understand it and can appreciate those guys that are in that role. But yeah, I played all three sports. Our teams were really successful. The Iowa Grant School District makes up 5 little small communities in Southwest Wisconsin. And as I mentioned earlier, when the high school has a big event going on, all 5 towns pour into that area. And whether it's postseason play or whatever, state tournaments, they really support the local community and the local school. And it's, one of the neat things about being in a small rural environment. Like I mentioned earlier, everybody knows everybody. You're related to half the people probably too. And there's just so much support. And I think that's really a neat thing about growing up in a small town.
All right. So you graduate from high school and you enroll at University of Wisconsin Platteville. Oh, that was an important time for you. I was just reading some of the notes that came out of that research. You didn't play basketball, according to what I read, but you did play on the baseball team there. And an interesting thing happened there. You were given an opportunity to serve as an assistant coach at 2 of the different high schools, both junior high, varsity, while you were at Platteville. How did that work out?
Yeah, it was kind of it was a weird, unique kind of culmination of events, Dave. I went to Platteville as an ag business major because I was going to follow my dad's footsteps in the ag industry. And I went out for baseball, as you mentioned. I lasted a very short period of time on the team. I had a hard time hitting the college curveball. So I got the pink slip on the baseball team after a short while and got cut. And I just knew there was something missing in terms of the athletic component or competition in my life. So having competed in, like I said, all 3 sports in high school, I was missing something there. So I actually answered a local want ad for an 8th grade junior high coach in a district about 20 miles south of Platteville in Hazel Green, Southwestern School District. And I coached while I was going to college and still actually majoring in ag business. I coached junior high for eighth grade team for 2 years. And I helped with the varsity team at that point in time, too, with some scouting and help with practice. I'd go to practice right after school with my eighth graders and then hop over to a 5 o'clock practice with the high school and then help the head coach with some local scouting. And I did that for 2 years. And then he put me on with the freshman team and continued to kind of have a dual role of coaching the freshman and then helping with the varsity. And also during the summers, I was working basketball camp for Coach Ryan, Bo Ryan at UW Platteville. And after the third summer, he apparently liked what he saw in terms of how I was coaching and working at camp. He said, "Hey, it's time for you to move on from the high school stuff. I want you here with me. But I also want you to help this new high school coach, a former assistant of his at Platteville High School, had just taken the job." So the fourth year I did dual role too. I would help with the high school team in the afternoon and then pop over and help with Bo's team later in the evening and kind of split time back and forth. And that was my first really foot in the door, so to speak, in college. And I did that just for one year. And then went even as a student. And I bounced around trying to figure out what I wanted to be when I grew up. I contemplated switching to criminal justice, and then I ended up going to education, knowing I eventually wanted to teach and coach. And so I switched my major to education, stayed there at Platteville, and was on Bo's staff as a student assistant from 93 until 99. I graduated in undergrad in 95 and started grad school. And, you know, was there with him for 6 years. We had great success, 3 national championships in that time. And it was really the entry point into my college experience. Got a chance to work under a phenomenal head coach and see how he had set up and run that program. And like I said, that was kind of the start. And then in 99, Coach Ryan got the UW-Milwaukee job, and I ended up going with him there. And that was a new experience too, because that was a start over. That was a complete rebuild job. Milwaukee had won 8 games over 2 years in the previous couple years before we got there. So it was starting from ground zero, trying to put the foundation in place in that program.
Let's back up just a little bit. I was fascinated by your interest in law enforcement. I know it didn't go very far, but I mean, I think there's a connection there, because I really had people ask me, you know, if you hadn't coached, what would you like to have done? And I always had an infatuation with maybe the FBI, something like that. I just thought it would be interesting and I think useful. How about you? What was the fascination with law enforcement for you?
In one of those summers, I think coming right out of high school, I had, in addition to coaching at camps, I worked at a local state park, or it was a county park. And I worked in the front office selling campsites and admission stickers, all that type of stuff. And I got kind of hanging out and helping the park rangers on the side, just in spare time, or would walk around or ride around with them. And the park needed more park rangers for the next summer. So I end up, the park manager actually asked me, "Hey, do you want to do this? We can send you to law enforcement training at night at a local tech school." Still went to Platteville. Then I would drive on Wednesday nights to this tech school and take 4-hour classes and go through the law enforcement training. I had to be certified in order to be a park ranger. So that kind of got it going. And it was just an interest. It was fascinating. It was always exciting. You never knew what the next call was going to be, so to speak. So I did some of that with the with that local county park. And then I also worked for the sheriff's department in Iowa County, which is the county where I grew up in, and did some part-time work with them, one of the local cities as well. Did some part-time police officer work for them, just like I said, on the side, filling in for guys that were on vacation. And that kind of, you know, I walked down that road a little bit the same time I was doing the coaching during the school year. So it was more the law enforcement was done in the summer, just to try to generate income to pay for your own way through college. But at the same time, it was very, you know, I always found it exciting and interesting. And, you know, there was times when it was a little dangerous, a little scary, and you were skeptical about what you were going to be called to. But like I said, it eventually came to a point where coaching became more and more full-time, and that was the the doors got opened wider in the coaching profession. So I ended up walking away from the law enforcement. But that was I have great respect for our all of our law enforcement across the country. I share stories with when we go on the road. Obviously, we always get assigned, or I get assigned an escort. It's usually an off-duty police officer or a local sheriff's deputy, and get a chance to talk to those people and get a feel for their background, how they got into it, and I share my experiences with it. But it's changed a lot, obviously, from the, you know, the early to mid-90s. What those men and women have to go through now, day in and day out, is remarkably different than what even I saw at that point in time, you know, 30 years ago.
I, of course, having two sons, and one of which is a head coach right now in college myself, Ryan Odom, who is at UMBC. But he was, when you go back, he was a basketball player at Hampton Sydney, Division III right. program here in North Carolina, very good program at that time. And I think as I was looking at your resume along with Bo Ryan's resume and the success that you folks had with the Division III programs, the titles that you won there at Platteville, I think your team, Platteville, put Hampton Sydney out at least 1 year, maybe in the Final Eight, maybe in the Final Four. I'm not sure. Would you recall that? If you are, we're going to end this interview right now.
I do remember it, Dave. It was twice, actually.
Oh, Jesus.
once in 95, I believe, at Hampton Sydney to go to the Final Four.
There you go.
And then in 99, it was our last year at Platteville, we won in the national championship game in double overtime. So at that point in time, Bo made a decision, hey, they're starting to catch us. It took us double overtime to win the national championship. It's time to get out of here. Let's go to Division One. So, but no, Tony Shaver had great teams at Hampton Sydney. And that was always, as you follow, you know, you'd follow the different regions through the year, the Southeast, you always knew Hampton Sydney was going to have a really strong team. And, you know, those were exciting times. That was Division III basketball doesn't get enough credit for how good the coaches are, how good
exactly.
the players are. There's no doubt you learn a lot because you have to do more with less resources than maybe what you have to do at this level. There's no doubt that was huge in terms of Coach Ryan's development as a teacher and a coach, and made him the Hall of Fame coach that he is. And I was able to sit alongside for part of that journey and watch, and it's tremendous. My brother actually is the head coach at UW Platteville right now, and is off having a great year. But it's like I said, the players and the coaches at that level are phenomenal. As I always would tell our players, there's great coaching at all levels. Don't get wound up in the Roman numeral, because there's a lot of good players and coaches at all levels of college basketball.
Well, I gave you an opportunity to say that, yeah, we did play against Ryan. He was a great player, but you didn't say that, so we're going to move on.
Hey, Ryan did a great job of, I've got three kids. Middle one is a son, and he had retriever fever a couple years ago.
Ooh.
And Ryan got a chance. He met Ryan at the Final Four. I introduced him to Isaac, and about a week later, a big care package of Retriever Fever shirts, hats, banners. He's got all the UMBC gear
wow.
and pennants up in his room. So he's a big Ryan Odom fan and a big UMBC Retriever fan. So
I'll pass that along. Ryan, and we'll accept really that well. As an explanation. Thank you very much. All right, let's move forward here. Let's see. Bo Ryan, one of your most important mentors growing up as a young coach, gives you an assistant, gives you a chance to go with him as his assistant. 2001, you stayed with him to 2015 when he, at least from my standpoint, unexpectedly departed just before December. Tell me about growing up as an assistant coach under one of the, what I consider to be the very best coaches in the country when he was coaching, Bo Ryan.
Well, I'll take you back further in time, Dave. You know, in the area that I was growing up in, Cobb, was only about 25 miles from Platteville. And Bo came there in 84 from here in Madison as an assistant. He left the Big Ten to go run his own program in 84. And at that point in time, I was junior high, just starting high school. So we would go to his camps all the time in Platteville with that high school team we had talked about earlier. and you got a chance to know him in that regard. And then also, hey, the Friday and Saturday night entertainment in Southwest Wisconsin, there's not a whole lot to do. But this college team was starting to do really, really well in the late 80s. And I spent a lot of time on Friday and Saturday nights in Williams Fieldhouse in Platteville just watching the Pioneers play and Bo coach. So even at a younger age, well before I even got to college, I knew exactly who Bo was and the success of his teams. And as I mentioned, I get to Platteville and went to games as a student before I got a chance to work with him. But he opened the door for me, gave me an opportunity to get into college coaching. And I had no, you know, envisions that this was going to, it was going to all lead to this, to where I am right now. But, he gave me a chance to, you know, to learn, you know, in the gym with him and, gave me more and more responsibility as the years went on. And obviously he's been a phenomenal mentor for me, just, and the opportunities he's given me, and I still stay in close contact with him now. But I can never thank him enough for the opportunities he gave me. And like I said, it started well before I even got to college, just from watching his teams play and how hard they played, how disciplined they played. He's a terrific teacher. He's ultra competitive, and obviously it all culminates to a Hall of Fame career.
Well, you can't talk about Bo Ryan too much without mentioning the Bennett family. Dick, the father, Tony, still active, right, as a coach at the University of Virginia and just coming off the national title here a while back. What kind of influence did they have, or actually Dick have, on Bo? Bo on Tony, and then, of course, you're in the middle of it now. I mean, it just seems to me like it all worked out really well for all of you.
Right. Well, I think, you know, you go back to the 80s. Dick was at Stevens Point when Bo went to Platteville. So they were in the same league for 1 year. And then after that first year, I think Terry Porter was a senior, if I remember right, playing for Dick at UW-Stevens Point. Then Dick took the UW-Green Bay job. So There was only an overlap of 1 year of them competing against each other, but you know, that whole league, the WSUC at the time, had phenomenal coaches, and he had Dave Vandermillen at Whitewater, who won national championships. He had Ken Anderson at UW-Eau Claire, who went to the NAIA Final Four several times, and obviously Coach Bennett at Stevens Point, and then Coach Ryan was just starting to build the Platteville program at that point in time in the mid to late 80s. I think the influence there in the state of Wisconsin, it's Ryan and Bennett, Ryan, in terms of fundamentally sound, tough-nosed players, very solid defensively. And actually, Tony and I, when we came to Wisconsin in 2001, when I came with Bo from Milwaukee, we kept Tony, stayed on staff after Dick had retired and they had moved on from Brad Soderberg. And Tony stayed on staff with us for 2 years. And have a great relationship with Tony. He's like a big brother to me. So he stayed for 2 years, and then Dick came out of retirement, took the Washington State job, and Tony ended up going out and being an assistant with Dick. But still stay in contact with Dick Bennett a lot. He comes down. He'll be down here in another month or so. We're going to honor the 2000 Final Four team at a game, and he's coming in for that. He comes down in the summer. Get a chance to play golf with him at least once a year, and, you know, talk to him or text with him. Or he's an old school guy in terms of handwritten notes. So I get mail from him about once every 2 or 3 weeks. He's up in northern Wisconsin enjoying retirement and watching from afar. But it's always I'm very spoiled because I can pick up the phone, call two of the best coaches ever anytime I want, and Bo Ryan and Dick Bennett. So anytime I need some advice or need a sounding board, they've both been phenomenal with their advice and consultation because they've all lived it. They've all been there, done that. They've lived through hard times. They've lived through rough years and also good times, and how to balance all that. So, like I said, I am very, very fortunate to have relationships with two really good coaching families.
Okay, so you took over the University of Wisconsin Badger program in December of 2015. You don't see many changes in midstream. You know, it just doesn't happen much in basketball. That did. Was that uncomfortable for you? I mean, how did you handle that situation?
Well, I think looking back, Dave, the best thing that could have happened, the worst thing that could have happened is you got thrown into it midstream in deep water in a team that wasn't doing very well. And coming off two Final Fours. So expectations were really high, even though we had lost a couple guys to the draft, Frank Kaminsky and Sam Decker. We had graduated, I think, three or four other seniors. We had lost a lot in terms of the firepower we had the year before. But also, I think looking back, the best thing that could have happened was getting thrown in midstream in deep water, because I didn't have time to think about it. It was just, all right, let's grab it. Coach decided in mid-December he was going to step away. And we didn't have a lot of time to marinate on it, so to speak. We had to try to figure out a way to get this team playing better, improve some work habits. And so you jumped into it right away. And I think that, looking back at the time, would you like more time? Would you like to have that happen in June or July when you can really prepare for a season? Maybe in retrospect, but I think really looking back, the best thing that could have happened was not having a lot of time. Just trust your instincts. You had watched one of the best work at it for 20 some years. Do what you know what you do, and let's try to get this team better. So we were able to, you know, jump in there in mid-December, had about a week before the first game, and got some things ironed away. And then we didn't start exceptionally great. I think we started 1-4 in Big Ten play. We were 8-9 at one point in time, kind of spinning sideways. But over the course of time, I think that just staying true to who we wanted to be and trusting the process paid off, because we ended up winning like 11 out of 12 down the stretch and finishing fourth in the league, back in the NCAA tournament again, and then made a run to the Sweet 16.
Fighting the teams in the Big Ten, the coaches that they've got there, the programs that they've got there, was difficult enough. But back when you fought an even bigger battle, your father got brain cancer. Talk us through how that transpired, how you were able to, you know, spend the amount of time with your team to help that get better, but at the same time, you really had to be, you know, the eldest son for your dad who was fighting a really big battle. Your mom was there, your brothers. I mean, there was a lot of teamwork within your family, the way I read about it. Talk to us about that.
Yeah. Well, we came off the 2015 Final Four when it lost the national championship game to Duke. And in May of that year, a month after the Final Four, my dad just developed some symptoms that were abnormal in terms of dizziness, tiredness. Anybody getting checked out by his local physician, they discovered or diagnosed glioblastoma, which is obviously a very severe form of brain cancer, as you mentioned. So at that point in time, Bo had not retired. So he was still coaching and the head coach, and I was obviously his associate head coach. So it afforded me a chance to, you know, try to help my dad, whether it be locally here with the different cancer research places, calling around the country, the different well-known, renowned cancer research institutions that could specialize in, you know, as a coach, Dave, you think you're invincible. You think you found a way to beat Michigan State. You found a way to beat Purdue. You've made your way to the Final Four. You've beaten Carolina. You've beaten Arizona. You're invincible. And I was convinced that there was a way we could beat this brain cancer with my dad, and we could find a way to help him get back to health and survive it. And cancer is a very humbling enemy. And over the course, we went through treatment and radiation for 6 months from May, or he started the radiation, I think, in June. The tumor was located in a portion of his brain that they were very hesitant to do surgery because of the risk of paralysis. And my dad didn't want that, being a very energetic and busy person. Lifestyle of being paralyzed wasn't really something he was in favor of. So they chose the radiation and chemotherapy route. I don't know, really, in retrospect, it didn't do a whole lot of good. And then in October, late October of 2015, he passed away. So that was an incredible journey with my family. Obviously, we're really close. We all live right here in Wisconsin. I mentioned my youngest brother is a head coach at Platteville now, but it taught you a lot about life. I think you learn to appreciate every day. It puts the wins and losses in perspective, as much as we lament and loathe over setbacks. And I think also looking back, 45 days after my dad passed away and we had his funeral, I was named the interim head coach in mid-December. And I knew walking into that, as big of obstacle or task as we had in front of us, there was nothing that was going to be more painful or harder to overcome than what I had just watched my dad go through and our family go through from May till late October. So I think that really gave me perspective, and I shared that several times with my team. And I had a player on the team at the time that had lost his dad in high school. So I think just knowing that there was nothing going to be more difficult and more challenging that we were going to see with basketball that was worse than what we had just gone through as a family. So that gave me the strength, I think, to try to help this group of young men, get back on the right track and persevere. And it kind of, heartened me, so to speak, calloused me to real life, because I had gone 45 years and really not had any, we had lost grandparents, but nothing that hit you that hard and that close and that sudden as what that journey with my dad and his brain cancer did.
Greg, I'm going to, as we kind of wind down this period of time with you, I want to go to the game today, and I want you to give me some quick thoughts on some areas that I will call out to you. Just, what comes to your mind first? I think there's been a lot of changes in the game, both on the court and off the court, since I stopped, which was 10 years ago. You've stayed in it through all of these years, so you've really seen it from another side. Let me just mention some, and you kind of just tell me what you think, whether it's good, it's bad, it could be changed, whatever you think about it. Three-point line just got moved back for the third time, really. What's your thought on that?
I think it's good. I think we've seen a dip in the percentages. I think over time, you're maybe not going to get the answer in 1 year's data. It might take 2 or 3 years to really see, does it spread the floor more? Does it, reduce physical play? Does it improve scoring by creating more spacing on the floor? But I think it's been good. I think that's a positive move in the right direction.
I've seen your teams play a number of times. You've had varying. You had a hot Hap kid a couple of years ago. You played with a low post player. I know he kind of went in and out of the post for you, but your team has always thrown the ball into the post. I don't see that with other teams now. Do you think that's something that's going to last, or is that something that we're going to see? It's cyclic. It's going to come back to us.
Yeah, I think it will. I think what you're seeing is there's just the evolution of today's player. And, there's so much that's put on, and this starts with the highest level of what young kids watch in the NBA or the infiltration of European basketball, the, multi-skilled bigs. Just watch how our pro team plays here in Wisconsin, in Milwaukee, the Bucks. They shoot a ton of threes. Their bigs are playing out in the perimeter. Low post, that's a little bit of a lost art. And I think our genesis behind that goes back to what Coach Ryan did all the way back to Platteville. The low post was regardless of your position, we're going to post you whether you're a one or a five and anywhere in between. But because it's a playmaking position, it's not just a low post scoring position. We like it to get it there because it's a high percentage playmaking position. But I think you're seeing the evolution of today's player, that perimeter oriented basketball and the ability to shoot the three, regardless of position, has been emphasized. And we work every day on post moves. We try to enforce or enhance how important being able to play in there is, and it's been very good to us.
Okay, how about the block charge circle?
I think it's been good. I'm not a big fan of giving officials more and more points of emphasis all the time. I know today in the flopping, Last year was the hook and hold. I've always been a proponent of just call the rules consistently as they're written, and we won't have to put in all these other points of emphasis. But I think it helps the officials in terms of maybe where positioning or where their help is rotating to if they're out from underneath the rim. I know that's the whole point behind it. But my concern with that is that every other point of emphasis we put on these officials takes their attention off something else. They have to watch too many things. But I think the line has helped because it gives them a visual reference. Most of the time they're getting it right. If not, they can always, like I said, look at the rely on one of their partners to help them out if they are in doubt. But I think it's been good. That's been a good move. But again, I'm not a big proponent of continually pile on more things that they have to watch and more points of emphasis because I think we're diluting and making their job even more difficult.
All right, we got three officials now, and they're constantly going to the monitor for replays. How are you on that?
I'm fine with that, as long as we can expedite the process and get it turned pretty quickly. And like I said, they have a really hard job, and I don't think they get enough credit. Now, I watched the films, and in calls that you may doubt, 99% of the time, they're right. But like I mentioned, they got so many things they got to keep their eyes on, and the game is so fast, and it's so physical, and the players are not getting smaller, they're getting bigger. The court's not getting any bigger. So they have a lot of boxes they have to check. And I think for the most part, they do a really good job. I think they get overworked. And I know that's a different story for a different day. But, sometimes fatigue, they're human too, and fatigue sets in as they travel and ref games through the year. But I think, like I said, they, by and large, they do a really good job.
I look at University of Wisconsin as a program that you are a developmental program. Your players come in and at one level, they're good players. But if they stay with you for 4 years, I got to believe they're going to leave a lot better player than they were when they came in. So how are this transfer portals? I mean, it doesn't look like you're maybe as affected by it as some of them because of the kind of player that you're recruiting and you've got in your program. It's more stable.
Yeah, I think it's two-part. I think, one, it's the type of player, not necessarily their skill level, but it's their mindset that they want to be part of something bigger than themselves. And if they're humble enough to realize when they walk in the door that, you know what, I'm not good enough. I'm not ready to play. And we've had freshmen play. I got one that's playing for me right now. But by and large, they got work to do. They're playing against grown men. So I think understanding in today's society, young people, and I talk to my team about it all the time, you're wound up in such a world of instant gratification. And part of that's social media and the devices they have of Twitter, Snapchat, Instagram. They can get what they want or an answer immediately. And unfortunately, real life doesn't work like that. And you have to work towards things. You have to overcome adversity. You have to get better. You have to work with the team. And that's anti the message that they have sometimes coming in that, hey, if I have to face some adversity, we need to change. I need to go somewhere else. So we've been fortunate to have the people and young men in this program that understand the big picture and want to be part of something bigger than themselves. And they've accepted and embraced the fact that maybe they're not ready yet or they have to get better. And so I think as long as they have that mindset, they'll continue to get better. It's the ones that maybe think they're better than they are or want something now and don't want to work for it. Like I said, everybody wants the corner office with the view. Nobody wants to start in the mailroom and work their way up. And we've gone through my career path. That's kind of been the route I've had to start in the mailroom and maybe even below the mailroom and work your way up. And the got young men that figure that out sooner are the ones that will not only have success in college and sustain it, but will be well prepared for what life is really going to be like once they're done.
Very few of them started on that hog farm either, did they?
Exactly. I always say, if I could recruit a kid, I'd put them on either in a military school or working on a farm for the 2 years before I got them. Then they'd understand what it was really like all about.
Last question, maybe the most important. We have a lot of coaches that from all ages. We got, but the ones that I want you to talk to right now are the young coaches, those that are trying to find their way in coaching. What advice would you give, let's say a 21, 22, 23, 24, year-old kid who's just out of college, really wants to be Greg Gard one day. How does he get to be you one day?
Make the job that you have currently, whether it's a part-time volunteer, junior high coach position, or a high school job, or volunteering at a local community college, or whatever it is, make that job the very best. And treat that job like it's the best job in the world, because it is. It's the one you have. And I think that's the biggest thing that even a lesson I got from Bo, as I mentioned earlier, about don't get wound up in the Roman numerals. There's really good basketball in high school. There's really good coaches in high school, small college, junior college, Division III, Division II. It doesn't matter. Good basketball transcends to all levels, but that's the biggest thing is make the job you have the very, very best, and treat it like it's the best job in the world and enjoy it. And don't get too, even though career progression is important, when you do a good job at the place you're at, people will take notice. And that it, I'm living proof of it, that I was fortunate to do a good job in junior high, did a good job at those camps that we talked about in Platteville. Bo noticed. And then over the course of time, you just build that. But I think, like I said, just enjoying the game and enjoying where you're at and making a difference for the young people that you have, the lives you have a chance to impact over the course of time, that will pay off. So that would be my advice. That was the advice I was given and kind of the path I followed.
I want to thank everyone for taking their time to tune in to the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast, and certainly to you, Greg. You're a real champion, good leader, and an example for all the young coaches to kind of watch what you've done and how you've done it. And I just want to wish the best of luck to you and your team for the rest of this season. I know we're right in the middle of it now, and you're good to step away from that for a few minutes and share your life story in coaching with those that are so interested in this. So to learn more about the NABC, a person only needs to visit nabc.com.